everyone. Welcome to our work session. This is Tuesday, October 13th. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, and we welcome everyone in the audience to our meeting and those who are online. I would like to call to order and let us have a Pledge of Allegiance, please. Mr. Persis, would you care to join us and lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to welcome everyone once again and like to introduce to all of you who is on the dais and who is on the phone. I would like to introduce our chairman, Mrs. Ida Wright, on the phone right now, who's under the weather and who has asked me to conduct the meeting today. Mrs. Wright is representing District 2. Mr. Carl Persis, on my left, far left, is from District 4, he's our immediate past chair. Mr. Ruben Colon, to his right, is from District 5. To his right is Mr. Ted Doran, our school board attorney. To my far right is Ms. Erin Lieben, our agency clerk extraordinaire. What would we do without our support? And Mrs. Jamie Haynes, representing District 1. And then Dr. Carbon Balgobin, our superintendent, to my right. Welcome to you, ma'am. And also, I'm Linda Cuthbert, representing District 3, vice chair and acting chairman at the dais. We have two items on the agenda for this afternoon. 2.01, we will be discussing the replacement school at Deltona Middle. Dr. Balgobin.
Thank you, Madam Chair Cuthbert. I would like to, we have a presentation for the board here today and for our members of the public in regard to the replacement school for Deltona Middle. At this time, I would like to ask Mr. Greg Aiken, who's our Chief Operating Officer, and Mr. Stephen Grube, our Director of Planning and Business Services, to come up, please. And they will share with us their presentation.
Madam Chair, board members, Dr. Balgobin, thank you for this opportunity to be here today. I have Mr. Steve Grube. He'll be doing the PowerPoint and discussing the topics we have back behind me. Mr. Lewis from CORE. I've got Mr. Tom Brown. He's my lead project manager. And next to him is David, and he's in charge. He's my project manager for this site. So without further ado, Mr. Grube.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members, and Dr. Balgobin, good morning. Thank you for having us here this morning. I wanted to bring you up to speed on Deltona Middle School master plan.
Sir, I can't hear you.
Can't hear me?
There you go.
Is that better?
Yeah, pull that microphone up a little bit, sir. Thank you so much.
I wanted to discuss with you the Deltona master plan project, specifically some of the challenges we've had out there on the site regarding the H piles, the structural pilings that are required on that project to support the structure of the three-story classroom building. Back in April, we did a significant number of borings on the site to determine subsurface conditions, and those relate to drainage on the site, structural analysis in terms of what preparation is going to have to be done to the site in terms of bringing in suitable soils, and we determined the approximate depths that we were going to need for the significant number of pilings that were going to be required structurally. On this map, you can see the red dots where we did all of the borings, and you can see also in there outlined the site plan of the new school on the site. So the timeline we present to you starts back in April, where we did borings to analyze the subsurface conditions. We brought Phase 3 plans to you back in November, which also had detailed structural drawings in there from the design consultants. CORE Construction then began soliciting bids from subcontractors in February. We brought the GMP to you in March. and issued a notice to proceed to core construction in April of this year. We did additional borings in June to analyze further and verify the depths of pilings that were going to be required on the site. We began that work on June 18th, and we completed the structural pilings on August 22nd. What we had determined early on during the time of the GMP was that the approximate depth of the pilings would be at 130 feet. And that was based upon all the analysis we had done on the site, including the borings that I showed you earlier. We also had a unit prices in the GMP per linear foot for any overruns that might be encountered while we're on the site. And those are on this screen here, too. You can see it. The 12 by 53 were $40.50 per foot, and the 14 by 73 at $50.25 per foot. Next slide, please. You can see outlined there on the screen up the footprint of where those pilings were going. We encountered early on, as we did individual pilings, that there were a significant number of overruns we encountered. The schedule had to be adjusted, and we had to bring more material on site. And some of those pilings, as you'll see, go up in excess of 300 feet. We increased the schedule and had that completion date of August 22nd for the driving of the piles. On the next slide, you can see how many those green dots are the piles that are required on that three-story classroom addition. You can see that they run the perimeter of the floor plan and some of the interior as well. So it's a significant number of pilings. If you had a chance to drive by or see what's going on out there, it's quite an operation with the rigs that are required to bring in. And you've probably heard this noise before, either on this site or if driving down the highway, you'll see them driving those big steel piles into the ground for supporting road structures and bridges. And you can see here in the picture, you can see that anywhere from 90 feet, and there's one at 320 feet. So what was required was that we bring in additional material, including we had to splice them together as they go down into the ground. And the total overruns that were encountered, you can see in the lower right-hand side of the screen, was over 9,000 linear feet of material. We kept very detailed records of each one of those as they went into the ground in terms of their depth. And this is difficult to read, but it's available for you. If you'd like to see it in detail, we have all of these documents that show each individual piling, what we encountered, and how much extra material had need to be brought in. And that's in order to reach a subsurface condition, a bedrock position, where we're structurally sound. The nature of the site was very unpredictable, despite the fact that we did a significant number of borings out there. The subsurface conditions, you can move 10 feet from one to the other side to the other, and it's very irregular down there. So that's why each one of these was measured and independently, and each one of them then was determined as to how much additional material had to be brought in. The total amount of a proposed change order at this point it's a big number. It's $584,000 in additional cost that we incurred to make this happen. We're bringing this to you today just to let you know that a proposed change order is forthcoming, and we wanted you to understand the rationale behind this and give you an opportunity to ask any questions and have discussion on it.
Board members, is there anyone who would like to ask a question of Mr. Group or Mr. Aiken?
Okay, so even though when you started this, you did a lot of sampling to see what it was going to take, did at any moment, and I realize, Mr. Groove, that you're new into this position, but at any moment did anybody stop and say, maybe we shouldn't build on this piece of property, and maybe we should look at something different, because I know that, you know, we got into the same thing with University High School, and that project went way over budget. I mean, because they just kept putting those steel beams down into the ground to basically create an entire infrastructure underground to hold up that building. And I appreciate how detailed you are and how you've actually, you know, you looked at each piling as it went in and measured it and figured what was needed. But that's a significant amount of money now to go over. So my question is, you know, did we stop to say maybe this isn't the best thing?
We did have that discussion several times along the way. And Dave, I'll let you chime in.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Just to let you know, Rob Branson and Sarah Lee at the time, they were looking at alternate sites. And it just turned out that they were too far away from where Deltona is at this point, and they felt that it was the best solution is to build on site, to keep that site remaining as is.
So then my next question would be this. As we talked about, you know, building some on the east side, like Tomoka Elementary in the future, we knew that in order to build there, we needed to rehouse those students in another location in order to knock the buildings down and rebuild. Did we consider the fact that because what we're doing is we're not building where the school is currently at, we're building on the piece that was lower next to it with Deltona Middle. So did we take into account possibly relocating the students from Deltona Middle to knock the original buildings down, because that piece of property appears to be more stable because it's held that school up since the early 1950s. And then built on that, would that have been a better route to go?
I can't speak for that one. I'm very sorry. The only thing that I can is when you start bringing in a portable classroom deal or the whole complex to house that many students, it for one, it gets really expensive, and for two, it's kind of difficult. So I think all those numbers were weighed between Rob Branson and Sarah Lee.
Okay. All right, that's all the questions I have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Haynes. Mr. Colon.
So all along we knew that Deltona Middle, it seemed early on in the process, was going to require, or we found conditions back there that we were not expecting. I will tell you, and I was, as you guys saw in the video, I was there last week. It's coming along very fast, believe it or not, despite all the rain that we've had. And all along, I've been hearing and expecting that this was going to cost more, because we realized quickly that the land was a little bit wetter than we thought it was going to be. Are there any other anticipated issues that we're looking at confronting that we may be able to be aware of now as it relates to this project?
We had some issues with the foundation, which have been overcome by design analysis. We were looking at some of the footings were shifting a little bit. We believe that some of that had to do with the pilings being driven into the ground. But we've had all of that analyzed, and we were given the go-ahead to start going vertical and putting panels on it. This is really the big issue that we bring into you today. Everything else out there is some things that you're typically going to see on a construction site. There's daily challenges. There are no major showstoppers at this point. We felt it prudent to bring this to your attention because of the magnitude of it at this point, and to, you know, just with full disclosure that we found some things out there that we just weren't expecting. Despite what we did a considerable number of borings, more than you would typically see on a project, expecting, like you said, expecting that there may be some things down there that we're not aware of. And we certainly encountered that. But at this point, we're... Dave, anything that you add to that? I think we're...
Because of the settling, because... exactly what Steve said. We were pouring foundation at the same time we were driving pilings, which we learned that that caused some other things happening. So there is things going down the road as far as that foundation. In other words, there will be some remedial work.
And do we have any idea how much that is going to cost us? This is when I hear remedial, it means to me that we might have missed a box in the process. And that missing a box in the process is now going to cost us a significant amount of money. Again, the land conditions and all of that, you know, at this point, you know, we were so far into that project that, you know, that, you know, short of doing what Ms. Haynes said, which I couldn't imagine doing, probably would not have been feasible. But as we move forward in this project, I would ask and that you all keep us informed, because, you know, if we're anticipating, and now that we're getting into the nitty-gritty, and I've scheduled a monthly visit there, but now that we're into the nitty-gritty so that we don't have, you know, $500,000 surprises,
yeah.
And that we, you know, and preferably, Ms. Superintendent, Dr. Balgobin, maybe down the way send us regular updates so that we know, so that, you know, I was expecting this because I asked a lot of questions about this, and I kind of expected this was going to happen because I knew they had to do more. But maybe keep us all more informed on the construction so that we can, you know, if I mean, we're going to face the music regardless of what the issues are, but maybe say, hey, heads up, so we don't end up with a $500,000 surprise. We'll call it a surprise, you know. It's nature at this point, but otherwise everything's going good over there. There's a little alligator in the back. let me take that back. Not little. There is an alligator in the back there in the pond, and actually as we were going through there, we actually saw him pop his head up. But that's what I would ask moving forward. That way we are all aware. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cologne. Hopefully there's a fence between that alligator and the construction.
There will be.
Okay. There will be a fence.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Better an alligator than a gopher tortoise, right? Otherwise, then we stop everything, and the project will get finished in 3 years.
Right.
How much did we budget for Deltona Middle School? I forgot the original.
The original was $51 million and some change, but basically
$51
million.
How much do we usually put aside for cost overruns beyond the budget? What is it? 10%? How much do we usually
contingency?
Buy? Yeah.
Well, not. I think as far as planning over, I think it is roughly that 10% number.
Yeah. So you know these things happen when you build a school. I mean, there's always something that's going to come up, and of course down the way there may be some things that we're actually going to save some money on. And so you know, while this is kind of a big number right up front, it's obviously something that we have to do. We have to deal with it right. And I have full faith and confidence. I just wanted to say that to Jamie's point, if we did try to build it, I mean, relocate the students, that's a cost figure too, mm-hmm. You know, of like $1.5 million just to set up that portable city. And
probably more than that,
yeah,
for our population.
Yeah, and then not
size.
Only, yeah, and then you, you know, just deal with all the stress that goes along with that. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that there aren't too many more things like this one. Steve, did you want to add something?
No, sir. I was just going to say that we are looking at potential cost savings throughout the course of the project. As Dave's doing his buyout, we're looking for those savings right now to help offset this and to make sure that we're not faced with any more major circumstances
sure,
that we're bringing
sure,
today.
Sure. I'm excited, too. Mr. Cologne is looking awesome. I mean, you know, do you see what's going on? I mean, it's coming together. It's going to be such a long time in coming, too. Everyone's going to be so proud of that new school. So I'm happy for the staff and the students. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Persis. Mrs. Wright, would you like to add or ask any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So from what I gather, and this is for future projects in particular, when we talk about Ortona. So when we go to places where we know there could be some issues with the soil and potential additional work that could be required, are we not able to foresee that? Were we not able to determine some of this before we started just based on university and based on where the school is located?
Yes, we can, and we believed that in this case we were proactive and did our due diligence with checking out with the number of borings that were done there. It seems that any time we go three stories, we're faced with additional structural demands on the building. That was university. It's here at Deltona. If it was a K-8 on the beach or anywhere, with three stories, we need to beef up the structure, and now we're faced with additional analysis and deeper analysis of the soils. We do that analysis for a regular single or two-story building as well, but we're not faced with the additional loads that are placed upon the soil and the demands for H-piles in this case and the significant number of them. So that is one situation that triggers the need for additional due diligence on those soils. We do check it for percolation. We check it for structural analysis. There's a lot of things that are done there in order to make sure that the water sheds properly or percolates properly as well. We're doing that analysis on the beach for that school, or in the preliminary stages of that. So the answer to your question is yes, we can. We try to be proactive in every way that we can. Sometimes that there are situations down there that are just unpredictable and unforeseeable. And this we would consider to be an unforeseen condition.
And similar to the question that Mr. Persis asked, so as we move forward, and I know we still may have a few challenges, are there other places where we potentially can have savings where we do not have we do not exceed our budget more than like 2% or 1%?
Just to let you know, we do a thing, it's called ODP, Owner Direct Purchase, mm-hmm. and that saves tax on a certain material. So whether it's concrete or just buying the HVAC equipment, et cetera. Well, right now I'm at over $7 million of ODP that we have bought out. So that's probably a tax savings just roughly of probably about $460,000 at this point, with more items down the road.
Okay. That's it for me, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wright. I have several questions. Have you alerted our half-cent oversight committee? Are they aware of the the overage and the difficulty with
yes,
the pilings?
Yes, we've briefed them on this.
Okay, is that normal protocol that we have? Because this is our fourth school. We do that. Is that normal procedure that we do that?
That we brief them?
Uh-huh.
They didn't know the magnitude of this. They were aware of the situation. Well, we have a meeting with them on Thursday of this week. So sometimes it's the timing of things as to when we can get full details to everybody. They were aware that there were some potential issues there. Mm-hmm. The magnitude of it, though, we brought this to you first.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to know that. And I trust Core Construction. They've got an excellent reputation. They were selected for this project because as I sat on the selection committee, we knew there would be some difficulties. This particular tight campus, foresee some, some challenges in design as well as, we didn't know it would be this much structural difficulties. As we build, we know about the pilings going in. Is the soil itself pretty solid? And the reason why I ask, as we build sidewalks, as we finish our buildings and build sidewalks from one building to the next and put up awnings to protect our staff and children, will that ground begin to sink away from those sidewalks?
From all the geotech and information that we have at this point, it's just the weight of that structure of the three-story that that we run into those situations. As far as the two-story part of the facility, it is a standard construction instead of the piers. So at this point, I would say that we are anticipating some settling, but at the same time, for concrete sidewalks and canopies, that won't be an issue.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. And where is, so we are not going to be taking more money from capital or the Hudson sales tax. This is to summarize everything what everybody's asked about and what the board members have brought up. We will balance the expense with direct ownership purchases and savings throughout. Correct, pretty much?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but thank you. This is, I think, very responsible from our building department, our facilities department. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for coming before us to let us know what's going on, because I'm sure Mr. Colon is being asked quite a few questions from the community about the building of Deltona Middle, and it's nice to have this transparency out there for everyone. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, anyone? Dr. Balgobin, you have anything? Thank you. I do appreciate very much you coming in this morning to enlighten us. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
May there be plenty of sunshine for you.
Madam Chair, can I ask
yes,
a question?
Yes, Mr. Persis.
I just wanted to ask the superintendent, and related to this, would it be possible maybe once a month at our workshop just to get an update from facilities, particularly, whoops, I forgot these things are here. Oh, my gosh. I'm Italian, it's the hand thing, about this, not just this project, but
all.
Some of the other things that are happening?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yes.
It didn't have to be elaborate, but just
an quick update.
Up to date, yeah.
You got it.
Great, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Persis. Okay, we would like to proceed to 13.01, replacements. Oh, we already did that one. 3.01, discussion of our impasse resolution hearing. So, Dr. Balgobin?
Yes, Madam Chair. At this point in time, I would like to ask Mr. Doran to go ahead. It's the impasse resolution hearing. There are five items. Mr. Doran, would you like to elaborate and share with everyone today the procedures that will be in place as we begin this process?
Yes, thank you, Superintendent Balgobin. I just want to, we'll refresh everybody's memory. So we had an impasse hearing that we went through, and there were a number of issues that impact bargaining related issues that the board heard from both the district and from Volusia or View and resolve those issues. We will be considering a final order later on at the regular meeting and possibly modifying that if necessary and then finalizing it at a later time. There were a number of issues that the board ruled were managerial prerogative in nature, were not subject to bargaining, and as a concession to View, based on their expressed desire to be able to have input on these issues, even though they are purely managerial decision-making issues, meaning that the superintendent and her designees would be making these decisions subject to future board approval on some of them. But nonetheless, you would like to, wanted to express a desire to speak to the school board about some of these issues and have input. And so we agreed, you agreed to do that, and that's what today's about. So there were five issues that I think were set aside with managerial prerogative. And so what we will be doing now going forward, of course, there'll be no vote. There would be no citizen input. There would be, you know, ultimately you have the teachers' representatives who are, you know, obviously a very, very important participant in everything related to school functioning, providing their input. It's as simple as that. And the board receiving that input and to whatever degree the board wants to engage in that dialogue, but also recognizing that ultimately these are all things that are directed and determined by the superintendent. And so this is that process that we agreed to go through to hear, that the board would hear out what they have to say, and the district, as I understand it, is here to answer any questions, and certainly to the degree that the board has anything that they would like to direct the superintendent to look into, consider, and those matters, that's also perfectly appropriate. So if there are no questions, or if there are any questions, I'm glad to answer them, but that's what we're here to do. And we're limiting our focus to just these five issues. Nothing beyond that for today's purposes, because this is a very unusual situation where we're allowing someone from, in this case, the view, but we're allowing, normally they get 3 minutes to talk. In this case, they get whatever time you allot them. You know, I believe we've set aside at least a couple hours for this, so it's a different process, but that's what we're going to go through, and but confine it to just those five issues.
Thank you, Mr. Doran. We would like to have a time limit on this, 2.5 hours. I think we can discuss these five issues. To be respectful of everyone's time, we know we're all very, very busy, so we would like to conclude by 1 o'clock, if or before, if that is at all possible. We would like to invite Mrs. Elizabeth Albert from The View to come to the dais to discuss first each, you know, the first issue, which has to do with implementation of safety protocols that follow CDC guidelines. I would like our superintendent to then, you know, welcome her also to our dais and also identify the speakers on behalf of the district, who will respond and discuss afterwards. And then after the union speaks, View, which is United, Volusia United Educators, the district will have their speakers speak, and then we can, the board then can discuss each issue one at a time. So, is that okay?
Certainly. Thank you, Vice Chair Cuthbert, members of the board, members, Dr. Balgobin, and members of the audience. It's nice to hear clearly articulated what the expectations are. I've spoken with two of you prior to today to try to obtain what those expectations are, and there wasn't clarity around those. So as we begin hearing what was just shared, you know, just now getting that information, going to have to spin here a little bit, because we actually only had 4 items that we indicated that we had moved to the workshop during the impasse hearing. So if we could start by clarifying what you have on the agenda to speak about, because I can speak about 5, that's not a problem, but we only asked for 4 during the impasse hearing, but we can go to 5 and with me, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. So what I have in our documentation, I believe they were items F-I-N-O, but let me go back and pull my record here. The first one that I have was, in fact, F, and that was the implementation of safety protocols that follow CDC guidelines. Do you have that on your list?
Yes, ma'am. That's the first one.
Great. We're off to a good start. The next one I have is I, which is compliance with CDC and AAP guidelines during transition. Do you have that one?
Yes, ma'am. That is our number four.
Two for two. The next one I have is, let's see, N, workload issues for ESE case managers, specifically limiting non-state mandated paperwork, allowing for electronic record keeping, and lessening the parental contact responsibilities. Do you have that one?
No, ma'am. I do not have that one. Let me. Can I give you what our five are? Would that help?
Can I do my last one?
Certainly.
Okay, because we may have at least three out of my four.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one that I have is Volusia Online Learning class size caps. Do you have that one?
No, ma'am.
Okay. May I share a document with you that we will also, depending on what happens in the break between the workshop and the meeting, I've prepared a document, and it was sent to you electronically, but I'd like to give it to you as well because I think it will help with some of this. Is that okay?
Sure.
That would be fine. Thank you, Mrs. Okay.
Erin, would you mind? So this document that you're receiving was in fact sent last Friday as an attachment from Ms. Butler. This is going to serve multiple purposes. Again, depending on what happens in the break, we may reference it again this afternoon at the meeting when we actually talk about item 18.03. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I'm referring to it in this moment in time, this document actually is a review of the impasse hearing video, where we have gone through and indicated where the timestamps are in the video for clarification purposes. And so if we look through here, we can find where items F, I, N, and O are referenced. And that begins on the bottom of the second page and up at the top. And I tried to highlight all of the timestamps, and I missed that one. But it says can be found at hour 7, 14 minutes, and it was agreed that these would be pulled for discussion at a school board workshop. So that's why I'm just sharing that to show that those were the four that we had based on our note-taking and our review of the video. But again, I'm very interested to see what else you'd like to talk about so that maybe we can accomplish more than we originally had.
Okay. What we have first is the one we agreed to. Implementation of safety protocols that follow CDC guidelines. Our number two was temperature checks as a supplemental duty. Our third one is a timeline for replenishment of PPE. Number four was compliance with CDC and American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines during transitions. And last was the sanitation of classrooms by bargaining unit members.
Okay, so the temperature checks we pulled. So we ask that that one be pulled.
All right, that's pulled.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And so that was item G, and that can be found at hour 7, minute 18. And we had asked that we remove that from the impasse process. And we had also asked at the same time that item K, which was the weekly COVID list, be removed. Again, at hour 7, minute 18 in the video.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So we do have one. Is it all right with you if we can do our list first?
Absolutely.
And then we can address your two additional so we can write them down.
Certainly.
Okay. I would like our district to be presented with the two additional items that you have that we did not have, so that they have a moment to prepare as well.
And I'm working from several documents, Mrs. Cuthbert.
Okay.
So the additional ones, let's just double check now.
Okay, this is from Mr. Penley. It's your electronic personality.
Oh, thank you.
Your electric, your energy. Are they grounded okay over there?
Might be that Georgia face mask coming on.
I think could be.
I think this item is very close to the microphone. Maybe that's it.
That's it.
Better? All right, thank you very much. Okay, so the additional items for clarification are...
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell me so I can make sure that we're on the same page?
The ones that we are working on first, we are working on the one we agreed to, the safety protocols that follow CDC guidelines.
Right.
Our next one has to do, and we've eliminated the temperature checks.
Correct.
Next one is the timeline for the replenishment of PPE.
That's it. Okay.
Okay, let me know when you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
And the compliance with CDC... and the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines during transitions.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And the last one that we have is the sanitation of classrooms by bargaining and unit members.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. And then we would like for you to let us know one more time which items that Mr. Penley needs to consider.
So the additional item would be the workload for ESE.
Mm-hmm.
And the, oh, I'm sorry, tell me when you're ready.
That's your N?
That was item N. From MPAS.
Next one?
That's it.
And the next one and the last one is the VOL class size caps. That was item O.
Yeah.
Got it? Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, please proceed, Ms. Albert.
Well, and in looking at our list, it seems like we could probably combine the CDC guideline conversation along with the compliance with CDC AAP during transition conversation for efficiency purposes, because basically it will, in fact, be the same thing. One would be just inside when we're not moving, and, of course, the other one would be during transition. So, you know, basically the consideration that we are asking for and what we've been talking about since June and July is the adherence to the CDC guidelines so that we can prioritize the health and safety of everyone involved in Volusia County Schools. We know that there is no greater value than that we can place on an individual's health and safety. We know that we are a critical factor in what happens in our community, and our schools need to be open. We know that. And we've never taken the position that we should not reopen our schools. That's never been where we've stood on this issue. Our position has always been and will be that we need to open our schools. We need to provide the highest quality of academic instruction to our students, but we need to make sure that we do it in a safe manner, and we need to make sure that safety is always at the forefront of everything that we do. And so that's why we've asked for adherence to CDC guidelines. When we began the discussions this summer about crafting the reopening plan, that was the conversation that we were having, and that was fine. But as we entered into the final stages of crafting the plan, as our teachers and support staff reconvened into our school settings for pre-planning and actually started putting desks in classrooms and looking at the environment in which we would be receiving our students, we started to have a walking back, if you will, of the CDC guidelines, particularly the social distancing part. And I understand some of that within reason. However, Ms. Boswell explicitly stated
to, I believe it was you, Mrs. Cuthbert, when asked about the spread of the virus, what we can do to make sure that we can do our best to eliminate the spread, she said maintaining that 6 feet of social distancing is really the only way to ensure that we limit that spread. But what we know is that inside of our classrooms and in our schools, we're not able to maintain that. And so that's what we've asked for that consideration. Now I know as we are moving towards changing our methodology of delivering instruction, I know that as we separate out Volusia Live and face-to-face, which is the right thing to do, but I know that it makes this process even more complex. And so we just wanted to work with the board and with the district to figure out a way that we could try to accomplish some semblance of distancing in our rooms. We're hearing every day from our teachers that they're receiving new students almost daily. We know that when January comes around, unless we can get a reprieve and some relief from Tallahassee, that we're going to have to really make some serious decisions about how we do this. Our numbers are unfortunately going up right now, and this is a really this is a big concern for everyone involved. So as we talk about maintaining those guidelines, as we talk about maintaining them when students are transitioning, you know, that's what we're asking for some help with here, because once someone gets sick, it's too late. So that's what we were asking for here. We were asking that they be maintained. We know that in some classrooms, desks are only inches apart. We know that the shields that were purchased, it was a one-size shield. And so it turned out that in our secondary schools, they didn't cover the above the chest area for some of our secondary students. So that wasn't helpful there. So we're asking for some considerations and the ability to maintain social distancing.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Penley.
On that, Madam Chair,
Mr. Penley, you need to pull the microphone a little bit
I'm
closer
sorry.
To you. That's
is
okay.
That better?
We understand. Georgia is. We understand.
The
Go Gators.
We'll see you in November. On that, Madam Chair, the superintendent has designated Ms. Rowland and Ms. Fisher to address any issues, any questions that the board might have about the implementation.
Yes, Mrs. Haynes.
So, Mrs. Albert, I just want to address first the thing that you said at the end about the shields. So, yes, the first set of shields that came in were not tall enough for some of the secondary students, but I have been back out to my high schools because they ordered additional shields for the high schools, and those are on campus and have been switched out or whatever. So when the district realized that the first round that they ordered would not work for the high schools or, you know, even – I was at a middle school yesterday. There's some very tall students at middle schools. Those shields have been sent back out, and they have been on campus for a couple weeks now. They came in sometime in September, I believe, and so I think they have been out there. I personally even set one up at Taylor Middle High to see what the difference was between the two different sizes, and actually the new ones are very clear. And they are sturdier. So that has already been addressed, and I know that Mr. Aiken probably could give the exact details, but that was a concern that came up early on, but it was rectified with the purchasing and through Mr. Aiken's department. So I have seen those out there. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Haynes. Mrs. Wright, do you have any questions?
You have a better connection there, but If not, if...
I'm sorry, we didn't hear what you had to say.
Hang on 1 second. Now, if we're moving Aria out, so she's on the meeting open.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
There's not a lot of movement going on here. Move on.
Hi there, it's Aria. I'm relocating to another office.
Just pause. It's a different call.
Talk about getting your wires crossed.
Just ask if he's right.
Are you there? Right, if you're there, your mic's muted.
It sounded like somebody else called
in. I'm sorry. I thought I muted. I'm here. I can hear.
That's okay. That's something we've all fallen to. So thank you, Mrs. Wright. Would you like to add any comments or ask any questions of Ms. Albert or Mr. Bentley or any of the other three, Ms. Rowland, Ms. Fisher, or Mr. West?
No, I just had one question. I know... we talked about this last time, but once someone is exposed and notified, are we now, those classrooms and those students, are we now putting the tape on the door so that people know that the facility has been cleaned?
Mr. Aiken will be answering your question. He's coming to the dais.
Okay, let me just...
Okay, but I can go ahead and ask Ms. Rowland and Ms. Fisher, and thank you all.
So
normally when you are notified, can you hear me?
Yes.
When someone is notified or they are notified, what is the turnaround time to notify the other teachers and parents?
Okay.
Okay, so I'll answer the first question, and I think Ms. Rowland will answer the second question. First question was, are we putting stickers or something on the door stating that they were sanitized? ABM is looking for something to kind of put there. We haven't done that yet, but all of the rooms are being deep cleaned nightly, and we are doing core inspections. So anytime we have a request for a deep clean, or e-misting, those are immediately sent over to ABM and the principal, from the principal to us. And then when that's completed, we are sending back an email stating that is completed. Those rooms have been done.
So therefore, those they're not being occupied during that time?
That's correct.
Okay. I think
yes,
that's what Mrs. Wright was trying to ask.
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Wright, as soon as we are notified, there's not a specific timeline to be notified, but as soon as the dead fish are notified, either through an employee of the school or Department of Health, we begin immediately calling the parents. So as soon as we're notified, we start calling within the next 30 minutes or so. Even on weekends, we call the parents and the principal to make them aware. So there's not a timeline. We do start immediately once we're notified.
May I just add? Thank you for that opportunity to add. I will tell you that the experience in some of the schools and work sites has not been a timely turnaround. I know that just, I don't even know if it was this week or the end of last week, I received information about a positive situation at the Herbert Street Center. I immediately called Mr. Aiken, and he took care of it because he does that when I call, immediate turnaround. But I think there could potentially be a disconnect between what the expectations are when a positive case is identified as far as reaching out to get the e-misting done. So part of what I'm here to do today is share what's happening in real time so we can find solutions and make corrections. That's why I wanted to contribute that piece.
Okay. Mr. Aiken, is there a possible solution?
Yes, ma'am. So we have requested that when the principal gets notified, and I think Ms. Rowland and I can actually communicate, maybe she'll let me know as well, and if it's a duplicate, that's fine. We can duplicate our communication to make sure I get that information in a timely manner. But yes, as soon as I get the email, no matter where I'm at, and I get them late at night as well, we notify immediately and take care of those areas, and that's our number one priority.
From this point forward, I will give you a call.
Yeah, so when she gets notified of something, then I will get notified, and I think that will kind of close the gap a little bit on that. Okay?
Okay, Mrs. Wright, would you like to continue?
That's it for me for right now, Ms. Cuthbert. Thank you, Chairman Cuthbert.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Wright. Mr. Colon.
So, Ms. Albert, you mentioned the social distancing, and I am not aware of any efforts that the state has made in order to ensure social distancing in our schools. The schools weren't built for social distancing. We are currently in an environment where we have moved to phase three of the state's reopening, and absolutely no efforts, money, ideas, direction, or anything has come from the state to support having smaller classrooms, or better yet, less children in each class. That's a challenge being faced by every school district. We asked as a board for a waiver so that we could keep class sizes smaller, and we're still hearing the crickets as we are awaiting a response, which I think it's clear from the direction that the governor has set forth that we're likely not going to get that waiver approved. So as a board and as a school district, those folks who determine class size, the fact that they are acting as if nothing is going on puts a huge limitation on what we are able to do and still be considered productive. They determine class size. They determine max size per classroom. And I've said to lots of folks who have reached out to me, under those conditions, having no ability to keep classes smaller, having no ability to have kids come one day and not the other, what do you propose would be a solution based on the guidelines that the state has given us, which is basically nothing to see here? There's nothing going on. We could fill up a stadium. We could fill up a bar. We could fill up a school. In fact, I'll even quote our governor. The one of the worst mistakes in world history was closing schools in March. That is the boundaries by which we are given to operate. What do you suggest we do differently based on those recommendations? Because I don't know. I feel hand-tied by the state in what our options were. So what do you suggest we do differently within those confines?
So thank you, Mr. Colon, for the opportunity to respond to your question and your multiple statements. And I hear you, and I truly do recognize the deficit coming out of the Capitol. I do recognize the barriers that have been placed in front of not only Volusia County, but the other 66 counties in the state as far as how to overcome this public health crisis and educate students at the same time. But I will respectfully say to you that just identifying all of those barriers and standing there and saying, well, what do we do? That's not the way to go. So it's time for us to work shoulder to shoulder and figure out a solution. I can propose several things to you in this moment alone without even having data to look at and access to our true vacancy numbers and things like that. But just right out of the gate, affording folks the opportunity to work remotely would have retained many, many, many members of your instructional staff who chose to take a leave of absence or retire early. But because Volusia County Schools would not create a provision where instructional bargaining unit members could work remotely and feel safe about going about the business of teaching kids, has caused many people to walk out the door this year. And so if we were able to think about how to offer that, I can tell you that some people would come back.
Well,
I can tell you that. And the same thing is occurring with these elevated class sizes. I know we just went through the count, and there were reductions made. And because the class size numbers are going up, people are walking away. So while I don't have a magical solution that will fix everything, I can tell you some of the things that we've done that have caused people to walk away. So if we're talking about retaining the folks that we have, there are things to look at. If we, HR is in a bit of a pickle right now, so they're not here to talk to us face-to-face. But wondering, if we were to look at all of the folks that went out on a leave of absence this year and have conversations with them about what would you need in order to come back, have we asked any of them those questions? I know that there's one gal getting ready to go out because she's afraid of elevated class size numbers. I can tell you there's folks that are getting ready to go out because they don't want to do multi-grade classes. How do you do a VL multi-grade K-1 class? You have 5 and 6-year-olds, K-1, that you're trying to teach through teams, which is challenging enough if you have one grade level. But when we create environments that are just overwhelming, we're driving folks in the wrong direction. So if you're asking me what the one magic solution is, I don't have it. But I can tell you about ways to get closer to the mark.
Well, and that is... And again, I specifically spoke about social distancing. And it is, what you just said basically echoes the same thing I said. There's lots of challenges. I just don't know what we could do different right now other than have children wear their masks. We can't keep small class sizes. There is nothing in the state's plan for that. So, while it's easy to bring up the concerns, my question is, what is the proposed solution? Because I, for one, feel very limited personally. And I'm not in the classrooms. But I'm wondering, based on our current confines, what do you propose? And we can talk about this another day, that we could do differently as a school district when, from the get-go, the state has done absolutely nothing to keep us from putting 60 kids on a bus.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, finish.
And so that's where, if we're really going to talk about problem solving, what are the proposed solutions? Because when I talk to a teacher who's got 22 kids in her class and she's scared, okay, and I explain to her there's been no change to class size, they're like, but we're in a pandemic. And I'm like, well, unfortunately, the rest of the world is behaving like we're not. And those that matter are behaving like we're not. So those are the rules in which the district has to function. So, what would be the solution? If we can't have smaller classes, we ask for the waiver. Really what we've done is we've mitigated the risk with all the different things, the masks, the shields, all of that. But I don't see what else we could have done.
The discussion, we do have some resolutions. I would like to ask if Dr. Balgobin can add to the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. A couple of things I just want to share and kind of reiterate. Mr. Colon, you're absolutely right. There are so many limitations that's been posed upon us, all 67 districts. But one thing I'm very proud about when it comes to Volusia County and this board is that we don't sit and wait for something to happen and then we examine the effects and then we decide to react. I can tell you since I became part of acting superintendent, now superintendent, that's one thing that I've witnessed firsthand with this board. A couple things I want to share. As we knew that there will be some students coming back into the traditional setting, many of us, as we've had our weekly communication, one of the topics that we've discussed is let's look at this from a proactive standpoint. Absolutely, you cannot go and change the current space that exists in our schools. But can we think creatively and out of the box, and what is it that we can possibly do as we know more students will be coming back into that setting? And I will share with you a couple things that we are doing, processes that are in place. First of all, we don't want to be surprised in terms of how the numbers are, in terms of the numbers that are returning to our schools, how many students. We don't want to be surprised by that fact. So one of the systems that we have in place is that every Wednesday, our HR team, Mrs. Hazel, who, by the way, is on Teams, and Mr. West is also on Teams, Mrs. Hazel and Mr. West and a few folks from HR, they are meeting with each school and looking at Tina Skipper and Stephanie Workman. And what we're doing is that we're looking at each school and the numbers for each school in terms of how many students are returning back on a weekly basis to their traditional setting, and what is that looking like in terms of grade levels. So that first and foremost, when it comes to maintaining that average of class size, as you've indicated, Mr. Cologne, that we are in compliance, that's one. But also in looking at if there might be an issue, what is it that we need to do to ensure that we are, to the best of our ability, implementing those CDC guidelines. In addition to that, we've had some very creative minds come together, and we had approximately about 20-something between elementary, middle, and high administrators come together. And this actually transpired last week with the advisement of our board members here. They came together, and we talked about this specific topic and said, guys, what might be some possible solutions with the current parameters that we have in place? And we have received some really good feedback from our administrators because they're the first on the scene. They're part of the day-to-day operation of their school.
Teachers also were.
Thank you, Ms. Kaur. I was going to call you Dr. Kaur, which you will deserve anyway. And they were part of the team. And I think, Ms. Albert, when we talked briefly last week, I kind of mentioned that to you. So what they've done is that they have come up with some really good suggestions so far, and that is examining their current schools and the physical layout. They've talked about, for example, I'll give you some examples. They looked at the space in the cafeteria, right? And they looked at their current schedule that they have for serving lunch in the cafeteria and breakfast. So they spoke about those periods during the day in which the cafeteria might be available. They looked at their media center. They looked at lab settings and looked at what labs. They looked at their rotational model that they have in their schools for their special area to see what might be some classes or classrooms that will probably be available. If they've got portables, they look at the additional portables that they have. Believe it or not, they also came up with some suggestions such as outdoor spacing. And what that would look like and what they would need. So just to summarize for you, and what I'm saying is very brief compared to the list that we've had. They really came up with some good possible solutions, and they've presented that to us. So the next step would be now, as we're monitoring these numbers on a weekly basis, to determine where there might be a situation in speaking to each principal so that we can start perhaps integrating some of these recommendations that's been given to us by our teachers and our school-based administrators. So that's where we are, and I apologize that I didn't get a chance to really elaborate further on this with our last week one-on-one, and that's because it occurred after.
So if I could just quickly respond to Mr. Cologne, please.
Yes.
So, Mr. Cologne, one thing I know for sure is if we're going to reduce class sizes, we need more teachers. I mean, that's just very simple approach to fixing, reducing the class size. If you had more teachers, the class sizes could be reduced. And so, therefore, I'll go back to my original comment, which was if we have a group of teachers that have gone out on leave of absence for this time period, if there's a reason that they're out. And more than likely, the reason is because they don't feel safe in the physical environment. So why wouldn't we explore options to allow them to provide academic instruction to students through a digital means, remotely, if you will, so that they could feel comfortable and students will still learn and we could start to diminish class size? Thank you.
Would Mr. West or Ms. Hazel like to address Ms. Albert's concern?
Mr. West, can you hear us?
Of course.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Can you hear us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, okay. We can hear you.
Sorry, I think I'm a little delayed on this.
Good morning. Can you hear us?
It's a delay when it's on.
Good morning. Sorry, just a little delay on the YouTube thing there. So, Dr. Balkman addressed the issues pretty much that I think Ms. Hazel and I wanted to address in regards to meeting on a weekly basis, keeping up with the numbers, tracking the data. That's the most important thing that we're doing. And we do know that we have a number of leave of absences that we have taken place this year, a few more than in past years. But when we really look at the numbers of the total number of movement, I'm going to say, based on retirements, leave of absences, and just folks not coming back, it has been a little bit of an upsurge this year, but not significantly more than what we wanted to, that we kind of were anticipating and concerned about. So I will say that by looking at those numbers every week on a weekly basis, by tracking that, and Ms. Workman will be sharing some numbers with you this evening at the board meeting from our HR update that she's been assisting us with and being in on those meetings, along with Ms. Muller's team and all of our assistant superintendents. It's actually the unit analysis or allocation committee that meets on a weekly basis to address that. So we do recognize this is something, and as Dr. Balkman said, something that we've anticipated, and we've tried to be proactive about to make sure that we're not putting ourselves in a position that's going to put anyone at risk. So thank you.
Okay. Does anyone from the board like to ask Mr. West a question? Okay, thank you. Mr. Penley?
I have Ms. Cuthbert. Ms. Cuthbert?
Yes.
I want to go back to both Ms. Albert and Mr. Cologne's question and answer.
Thank you, Mrs. Wright.
I believe, Ms. Albert, so when you asked if we speak to any of the ones that went on leave of absence, have you had an opportunity to conduct a survey for the ones that are currently teaching? The reason I'm asking, you know, we received feedback even from the impasse hearing of how teachers felt that teaching in both modalities, how strenuous that was, and the list of other issues. But immediately after that meeting, and I think all of my colleagues can agree, we probably were inundated with emails saying, no, they didn't want to move out of teaching both modalities. They are becoming more and more comfortable. So when we asked about solutions, how do we first make sure we touch in everyone? Because you speak of a group of students, we're speaking from teachers that we receive information from, but then all of a sudden the floodgate opens and most of the teachers really don't share the same sentiment. So how do we really gauge, be it through VUE or the school board, gauge the masses so that when we are making decisions, we're making decisions based on the masses and not a few.
So, Mrs. Wright, I received. Can I?
Go ahead.
Okay. So I also received a few emails from folks who have figured out how to make the simultaneous teaching work. Some of those folks are singletons who know that they're kind of going to be doing it because there are no other options. But by and large, that's not the consensus from the instructional staff across the district. By and large, the consensus was that was not sustainable. So I understand how, and Mr. Persis, over the years, you've helped me learn this, that you're not going to make everybody happy, right? Every good intention, there something else comes up. We know that. But I think, Mrs. Wright, in this moment, we have not done a survey of our VUE members who have taken leaves of absence. We have been fielding the emails and just walking them through the process. We could go back and identify those folks and reach out to them and collect that data. Absolutely, we could do that. And perhaps that's something we could do collaboratively with the Human Resource Department. And we could work together to find out what it would take to bring those folks back. We would be more than willing to do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
And if I'm not mistaken, as far as a leave, those on leave, we're talking, what were those numbers again? Are we talking about 60 teachers?
I have it.
Okay. Dr. Balgobin will answer you. Ms. Wright, the numbers that I have as of today for leave of absence is 79.
Okay. So it is your thought, Ms. Albert, that they're there, that they took a leave for fear of testing for COVID positive, correct?
I would say a significant number, yes, absolutely.
And so then my question would be, which my question has been from the beginning, of those 79, how many of them are really equipped to teach in a virtual environment? It's easy to say to put them there, but how many of them really would be effective in a virtual environment? I don't know who they are, so I can't say they are or not. I'm just saying, if you know some of them intimately, how many would you really say are capable of delivering instruction in a virtual environment?
Well, if I can respond, I know that they all, if they were employed last March, they all participated in the ICP, some more effectively than others, I will say, and I see you shaking your head, Ms. Haynes, I get it. But the point is, these are folks that are certified instructional personnel, and in some way, I know they can contribute to the academic achievement of our students, and what I'm trying to get to is, how do we take those folks that previously contributed to the success of our students and find a way to bring them back so that we can all win? To have folks sitting out who are capable of contributing to the greater good and they're not able to for one reason or another seems like we could put our heads together and find a way to bring them back. You know, when you go out on a leave of absence, it's unpaid. So that's a hardship that you're putting on yourself. But unpaid versus the potential of getting sick, you know, folks are able to weigh those and they make their own personal decisions. But at the end of it all, our job here is to make sure students are successful. So if we have folks that have the credentials to do it, can't we find a way to bridge that gap so that we all win?
And I do believe we will be working on that. Are there any other questions? Because of time, I would like to move to the next issue. All right. Thank you very much. So we have discussed very thoroughly, which I might add, the implementation of safety protocols that follow CDC guidelines and compliance with CDC, American Academy of Pediatric guidelines during transitions. That has to do with social distancing, number of teachers, trying to find spaces. So we all know what we're working on and what our challenges are ahead. So thank you for all the speakers so far. Let's go on to the timeline for replenishment of PPE. Is that Mr. Aiken? Okay, Mr. Aiken, come on down.
Madam Chair, board members, Dr. Balgobin. Ms. Albert, what we've done so far, this is the PPE status as of today, today's Tuesday, as of yesterday. What we looked at is the stock levels are monitored daily to make sure we can order right away. We are fully stocked currently right now on any replenishment items we currently have. The Oracle orders are averaging between 60 to 75 requests per day, and the schools and the end users are getting the orders the next day. What I can tell you is each school has a small stock in their rooms that they can replenish if somebody runs out during the day, but we are restocking those daily. And the burn rate is what we're kind of stabilized currently right now, so we're maintaining what we currently need in each one of the schools moving forward. One of the questions early on, and I will address Ms. Haynes' question about the went from 17 to 24-inch partitions. We did order 80,000 more. Those were all on back order. We did order those, but we didn't have them, so we ended up getting the 17-inchers, and so we put those out there until the additional 24 inches came in. And we are still, my team is still making plexiglasses for others that need those, and so those are moving forward as plexiglass becomes available for us moving down the line. So
okay.
That's currently where we are, and I can send the board, and Ms. Albert, I can send you what the status of our restock is today, if you wish. Actually, it was as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. I can forward that to you in an email. It's kind of hard to read. So.
Okay. I'm sure she would appreciate that very
right.
much.
We also changed from the sanitizing disinfectant to a new product currently now. So we have two. One's a plant-based that actually is user-friendly. Still requires a little bit of PPE, but we have a new product that we're looking at right now. We're testing it at Silver Sands Middle School, and that product is no PPE needed. It is also plant-based and easier to use for our staff.
Okay, that's wonderful. Mrs. Albert, would you like to respond?
Sure. Well, this was item H on the list that I have, again, which was managerial right, and this wasn't one that we moved forward, but I will just share in receiving communications from our members that there are some concerns, and perhaps the concern is more related to communication of what's available and a timeliness in replenishing at the school sites. Because perhaps those items are sitting in the warehouse, but they're not getting to the folks that need it in a timely manner. And if I could ask a very specific question, are we continuing to purchase wipes? Because there was a time there where every email was about wipes, and the wipes were no longer available for keyboards and whatever surfaces the wipes were being used for. I know that there has also been questions about the sanitizer that was originally given in the jugs, and now I guess teachers in some locations are being told, we'll bring your squirt bottle up to the front office and we'll fill it for you. That doesn't seem efficient. So I think perhaps being very I know what he's able to do, right? So I just, maybe it's communicating. Maybe it's that, and maybe the fact that the items are in the warehouse and not getting to the end user. So I'd like to ask those questions.
Yeah, so I'll address the wipes first, and if I forget something, just ask me. But the wipes first, currently, as of yesterday, we have 1,000 in stock of 1,200 sheet count containers. We are ordering more, so they're coming in, but that's what we currently had for gloves. As far as the communication piece, what we've set up is each school has identified one person, and the teacher should be emailing that administrator or administrator secretary and say, hey, I'm running out of. Now, there's some stock in the school that they can give right away to the teacher. And if they don't, then they can call us, and if it's an emergency, we'll be able to take it to you, which we've done last week to them. But everything I'm showing right now, the only thing we have a concern with is medium gloves. We have small and large. So if they order gloves, they're going to get large gloves and not mediums if they requested mediums. But that's the only shortcoming that I currently see on my list. Everything else we have in stock. So the communication piece, I can tell you, Ms. Albert, I will go back and make sure that my staff communicate effectively back to the schools, and they can go back to their teachers to say, hey, contact this person, and then we'll get that order to the next day, because we're filling them immediately. When they come in today, they're going to be filled tomorrow, and they'll be delivered sometime tomorrow. I just don't want them to run out before restock gets there, right?
Mm-hmm. So. And also, maybe with your weekly meetings, maybe Dr. Balgobin can arrange that you get an update during that meeting that you have with the district. That might help.
And is there a way, because I'm also being told that that teachers are going out and buying their own supplies to clean and sanitize. So, and I know that that's not covered under any kind of classroom money that's expended or available to teachers. So,
no.
Excuse me?
I don't know who said
Ms. Wright.
That. But is there a way, because we want to try to avoid that. I know teachers spend tons of money in their classrooms all the time, but if there's a way to reimburse or avoid that.
Maybe principals can reiterate with their teachers.
Yeah, I will make sure that happens. I wrote myself a note for communication.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mrs. Haynes.
So, Mr. Aiken, because we still sometimes get some emails about this, and what I would like, if at all possible, is a master list of each school and who the primary identified individual is, who is responsible for placing the order with the warehouse to replenish the items. And if at all possible, if schools could also identify a secondary contact in the event that the primary contact is out, because, you know, people, especially if it's a 12-month person, they're entitled to a vacation, or they, you know, may get sick or have a family event or whatever. So I think that could be the first step in communication that could assist all of us, is if we actually put together a chart that said, you know, DeLand High, here's who the primary contact is. In the event that you need something, the expectation is that you will email them. And I think what we have to be clear on, and this is both sides. If I'm the teacher, I can't wait till the day there's only two wipes left in my container to then say, okay, I'm out of wipes. Like, we have to be cognizant of, you know, if my bottle of cleaner is running out, you know, if I'm almost out of wipes, if I've received new students and I need new, you know, partitions, whatever. Like, you know, we have to be cognizant of that too, because everything can't be an emergency. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would feel a lot better if I had that list, so that when we do get emails, I personally could help stop some of those from having to be forwarded and forwarded and forwarded, to be able to say, okay, so you're at DeLand High, and here's your primary contact, here's your secondary contact. What it requires on your part, if you run out, is to send an email, or if you're getting low, and people really need to pay attention to if they're getting low on items, you know, because if, you know, I'll use the teacher at University High, for example, in the computer lab. You know, he's got a great system for how he actually sprays down, and the kids walk in and each take a paper towel. Well, he's just got to keep an eye on those paper towels and know, hey, I need more paper towels, and shoot off that quick email to, you know, and what I would do if I were a teacher, not, you know, because I may not know, is the primary contact out? I would just always put the primary and secondary contact on my email, knowing I've notified the two people, and one of them is going to get this order in, so that I have it, because it is about communication, and I see that just as a way of all of us working together, because it does take collaboration, and I'm just not good on the whole piece where, you know, I don't want teachers going out and buying anything, and they shouldn't have to buy anything, and I need them to hear that you're stocked. And I do appreciate the updated emails that you have sent to us, showing us, so that, like, I can go down the line and see you're out of medium gloves right now. You know, but I do appreciate that. And I do know that we're going through a lot more, because even yesterday, I know Mrs. Cuthbert and I were out serving lunch. But I have to tell you, serving lunch yesterday, in the 34 years I've been here, that was the easiest serving lunch I have ever done, because students stood on circles and slowly moved, and everything was prepackaged. But that Schoolway Cafe, I mean, we're spending more money on all this packaging stuff, but those people are working twice as hard to get it packaged so that kids get it, and, you know, they're not touching things and everything. But I have to say, they're doing a great job. And I was at a middle school. We did a sixth grade lunch, a seventh grade lunch, and an eighth grade lunch. Best time I've ever had serving lunch. I mean, you could actually talk to the kids. They could hear you. You could hear them. And it was very calm and went beautifully. But I would like a primary and secondary, you know, list. Because if we had that, then the minute an email comes in fussing or saying, hey, I don't have it, I can say, but did you contact these two people on your campus to get it? Because we got to work together.
Yes, ma'am. So we'll work on that, and I'll make sure all board members get that, and I'll make sure you do as well, Ms. Sackler, as soon as I get it.
And principals need to send, like, administrators need to send out an email you know, to all their teachers saying, here's primary and secondary contact. This is what, you know, don't walk by that person and say, hey, I'm out of wipes. Like, that doesn't work for me, okay? Don't go in their office when they're not there and lay a sticky note and think that they're going to find it. You know, I really like the thing of an email, you know, and even if we have a title for the email or something, and it's like, send an email to these two people in the title, you know, and this is what you need to tell them. I need wipes, I need paper towels, I need this, you know, and let it get ordered. And I think that would cut down on a whole lot of emails and a lot of problems, because I do appreciate that you guys are stocked and you're getting it out so quickly. And thanks to the warehouse guys.
Okay. Any more comments or questions? We are reaching our midpoint. And as soon as, if Mr. Colon is the only one, or if Mrs. Wright would like to add one more question.
I have one question.
Okay. We're looking at halfway, and we're also looking for a 10-minute break coming up, just trying to put the pressure on you a little bit. if you mind, ladies first. Mrs. Wright, please go ahead.
I just have one question for Mr. Aiken. So, Mr. Aiken, I did ask this before, and I'm not sure. This was at the beginning. So do we have a schedule of when we take materials to schools? So teachers or whoever the main point of contact will know that on Mondays and Fridays I'm receiving materials. So if you need items, you need to let me know. So do we have a schedule when we are actually delivering to each school?
Yes, ma'am, we do. We do deliver daily. So each of our schools get daily deliveries. So if they put in an order today, it will be delivered tomorrow. And it is on time certain. So some will get that delivery at 7 a.m. Others don't get that until like noon. So we have that. The schools know what those are. And I can send that schedule out if you wish.
So I just want, so we only deliver to those who request. We don't have just a delivery schedule. So that if I am Ormond Beach Middle and I am Osceola, that I know on Tuesdays and Fridays I'm going to receive items, or that's my delivery if I need items. That's my question, I think.
Ma'am, each school gets a delivery every day, whether it's the mail or it's food.
Every day?
Every Monday through Friday, yes, ma'am. So whatever needs to be delivered to the school, they are on a schedule to get a delivery. And then whatever is requested it gets delivered that day, right? So if they request something today, they will get that in their delivery tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, so every day. Okay. That's what I want to know. Thank you.
Right. So if they order it on Friday, they'll get it on Monday, right? And so, and we like to get the orders in before noon because we start packing everything and stocking everything and wrapping it and all of that. And so there's a process behind just, you know, putting this together and then putting it on the right truck to get it to the right school, those things. So, but yes, that is all detailed out.
Okay. Anything else, Mrs. Wright?
No, that's it, Ms. Cuthbert. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wright. Mr. Colon, one final
and so
statement.
So I just wanted to thank you, Greg, and the team for what you've done. Initially, this was one of my biggest concerns, and ironically, I tell you, I haven't had an email in weeks from someone saying we've run out of something. So I want to thank you guys for the work that's done, as well as our teachers for letting the point person know to order it. Piggybacking off of Ms. Wright's question, can we get to a point where there is a PAR level that is automatically delivered rather than someone having to physically remember? So we know a burn rate for Timbercrest is 3 gallons a week, where those 3 gallons are coming. And so, you know, if there is something in addition to, because that would take one more burden off of someone, if we knew what a burn rate was and we knew, okay, every week you're required this. If by next week you have 6 bottles, then we cut back 1 bottle. That way it is guaranteed to be there for the teachers when they need it. And again, what we're doing seems to be working. And I have not had an email or even seen anything on social media where anybody has said, you know, our school is out of something, which has been surprising. So kudos to your team. But I think that would probably be a little bit more effective, where they know their order on Monday is coming and they're guaranteed to have 10 packs of paper towels and 2 gallons of the stuff, the cleaning stuff.
So each school, besides what's in the classroom already, we actually keep a smaller stock on hand. So that does get replenished, and so we keep a smaller amount for the emergencies, right? I forgot yesterday, I got busy, whatever that was, a teacher conference, whatever that is. They can just say, hey, I know I forgot. So I need to grab some dish. So we are sending paper towels on a frequent basis, same with hand sanitizer. And the cleaning products we're kind of shifting on, so we're waiting for that to kind of finish and come out with the new stuff, and so we're pulling some of that back, so where that transition is taking place. We do have stocks on hand for the schools,
and we already
have that already.
And we are getting away from the soapy.
Yes, we are.
Detergent.
Yeah, the comments that I got, and I forget what school it was, and I apologize. I think it was Mainland High School. They did a survey of the foam EQ. Foamy IQ hand sanitizer, and the kids love it. They love the smell. It dries quicker, so it's a better product, and it's 25,000 to 30,000 pumps that you get out of that, so they're liking that a lot better. So, yes. So we are listening to our customers, and we are adjusting, and it does take time for us to adjust and come in stock. We have things in stock that we got to burn through to be able to get the others. And our burn rate's about $104,000 a week currently still. We are going to the county, Ms. Muller and I, maybe Dr. Balgobin, on the 20th, which is the greatest day in the world. It's almost like Christmas, only it's October 20th, to present to the county council for some assistance using their care funds. So just wanted to put that out there. It's the second Christmas of the year.
And I will add to your Miss Elizabeth, Stephanie Murphy yesterday, actually, she's going to be filing a bill to ask that teachers be able to deduct that from their taxes if they are having to spend it globally. So that was brought up yesterday, and thankfully our Congresswoman Stephanie Murphy is taking the lead on that.
Okay. That's okay. You don't need a final statement. Okay, we will break for 10 minutes and then conclude our discussion. So we'll see everyone back at 11:46. Thank you. Welcome back. We're back from our break and our work session. We are speaking and having a discussion between the district and the VUE, which is the Volusia United Educators, about issues that were in dispute during our impasse hearing, and that we had agreed with about five or six issues that we would discuss openly and to be able to start the ball rolling for resolutions. So we have our next issue. We have three more to cover. First, this one, it has to do with sanitation of classrooms by bargaining unit members. You have a comment, Mrs. Albert, who represents the VUE.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. So this was item J. Again, this one was voted as a managerial right and one that we did not identify to bring to the workshop, but we're happy to have the discussion because what we know is that our classroom teachers are, in fact, spending a great amount of time to ensure that the classrooms are clean and sanitary for the students. And at the secondary level, you know, they have the transition time between six periods. And so our concerns are that it detracts from the amount of time that's afforded for teaching. And so we know also that there are still concerns with ABM, our cleaning company. We know, as we articulated a little bit earlier, that there is a communication hurdle that we have to overcome, even when we have identified a positive case and e-misting needs to occur. And when we identify if that environment is now clean and safe for reentry. So all of those things combined relate to sanitation issues that we had concerns with initially.
Okay, thank you. You're welcome. Mr. Penley.
Yes, Madam Chair, there are a number of, since the time of the impasse hearing, there are a number of issues that have been addressed towards sanitation, and I believe that Mr. Aiken has been designated by the superintendent to address those modifications in the classroom.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Aiken.
Yes, ma'am. So, you know, the CDC actually provided a general framework for cleaning and disinfecting practices, and the framework and CDC seems to change quite frequently. But what we currently have in place and what CDC requires us to do is normal routine cleaning with soap and water will decrease how much of the virus is on surfaces and objects, which reduce the risk of exposure. Routine cleaning and nightly disinfecting are an important part of reducing the risk of COVID-19. Service frequencies, which are the touch points by multiple people and all of that, CDC does request that we clean those and disinfect those at least daily. What we provided, and as I stated earlier, you know, we're trying to be very flexible and understand the concerns out there, is provide layers of protection out there. Obviously, social distancing is key, wearing masks, and then wiping down the surfaces, you know, and providing the equipment that we're currently that we have in the classrooms today. I understand that it does take a little bit of time to be able to get that done. ABM had came forward in the past meetings with us, basically stated that they would make sure that they do all the hard surfaces and touch points nightly. They're disinfecting, and we sanitize, they disinfect those nightly. So we're meeting the CDC guidelines, but we are providing another layer by having or allowing the teachers to assist in trying to make sure that we clean those areas once the student is there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Aiken. Is there any discussion from the board, concerns or questions of the two young people in front of us? Mr. Persis, do you have anything to question? Mr. Colon.
Actually, so I'll ask Elizabeth. I mean, I haven't heard much come up on this topic either. It seems like this is something that over time we've just...
Well, I think that over time what's happened is that teachers have just moved on and they've realized, you know, and I'm just going to have to do it myself if I want it done. I mean, we've shown pictures of where teachers have taken a snapshot of the way the room looks before they leave at the end of the day and they come in the morning. Nothing's changed. And so at the end of it all, you have to make sure that our teachers are making sure that kids are safe and that they're safe. So they've just, I think, resigned themselves to the fact that they've got to get it done. because if you know, it's mutually beneficial to have a clean, sanitary, disinfected environment. But if I could add one other thing, there is a school in our district where there are teachers who work in portables, and they don't have access to running water. They don't have sinks or anything in there. There's a gang portable bathroom. And somehow or another, whether they fundraised on their own or someone donated, they have obtained hand-washing stations for their portables. Those have, and they receive them during pre-planning. They've yet to be installed by the district. So there is a solution for these folks who are working in a portable. We just need to get them installed. So if there's a way to help, because you mentioned hand-washing, a great way to stay safe. But these are just these little barriers that we're finding that could be easily fixed to afford people another layer, if you will, of that security.
So the stations at TT Small, and I thought they were already done, but I'll follow up and I'll let you know
Thank you.
Pretty soon. I thought they were already done, but I'll follow up on that one.
Thank you.
For sure. Yeah.
Thank you. So, I mean, I think over time this is, for whatever reason, I'm not going to say it's a non-issue. It's just something that I haven't heard anybody say anything to me, nor have I really seen a whole lot posted about it. So, you know, like I said that day, it's one of those things where, you know, we are all in this together. And, yes, I did use the cliche line. And I think, you know, so non-issue. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colon. Mrs. Wright, do you have anything to add or question?
No, ma'am, I do not.
Thank you. Mrs. Haynes. I have just two comments. I'm very grateful for the online response we have from teachers. I know it was done at our superintendent's direction. It was created by Kristen Dissler in her tech department. That has been marvelous because it's upfront. There is a record of it. Everyone sees it. And I also, usually first thing in the morning, my first emails are from Mike Reed. Who is taking care of those issues right away. But I've also noticed some of those complaints are the same ones every day. Trash not empty, vacuums, classrooms are not vacuumed, bathroom is not clean. So it's I'm just wondering, as we progress, maybe at the meeting this afternoon, after talking with ABM, could we have an update on staffing? Because I think the workers are working very, very hard. I'm also concerned, are there enough people in place at each of the schools in order to take care of those school needs, which has to do with e-misting and deep cleaning every night, as well as the other usual duties that they have of keeping our students safe. So I'm looking forward to that maybe
this
afternoon.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on this issue? Because we will move on to the next one. Okay, thank you. The next one has to do with, the workload of the ESE department.
Madam Chair, if I might be heard prior to your taking that issue.
Yes, sir.
As you know, even in workshop sessions, these are public meetings that have to be noticed pursuant to the Florida Sunshine Laws. This meeting was noticed today on the five issues that are before you and have been published in the agenda. The district did not receive until Friday afternoon after the close of the newspaper's publication deadlines any disagreement with those issues that had been outlined previously in our notice and had been published in the newspaper according to statute. If you're to take up any issues that have not been publicly noticed, we would have a scope objection to that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Penley. Mrs. Albert.
Mrs. Cuthbert, just for a point of personal privilege, perhaps even, there was a press release that was sent out on September the 18th after the impasse hearing. The items that were noted for the workshop that would be scheduled at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, October 13th. There are bulleted points here, and those, in fact, do include the workload issues for ESE and the Volusia online learning class sizes. So one might say that there was public notice at the time this press release was sent out on September the 18th, 2020. But I would also suggest that there have been times where this board has taken action that hasn't been on the agenda. Discussions arise and the board has a conversation, and as the legislative constitutional officers, you guys decide to take action, and it occurs. So I don't know, for the purposes of having our conversation where we're seeking solutions for our staff and our students, that it's inappropriate to engage in a conversation.
Okay. Mr. Penley, do you have a response?
No, it's entirely up to the board as to whether you proceed to hear these issues.
Okay. Mr. Doran, what do you advise?
I agree with Mr. Penley's statement. It's up to the board if it wants to take on some additional issues. There's not a prohibition. There's an attorney general's opinion that discourages, you know, going for the board to consider any issues when it votes. Mm-hmm. If the issues are deemed to be, you know, substantially material or highly impactful, but beyond that, there is no prohibition. You can really take up anything you want and resolve it, as long as you're at a publicly noticed meeting, which you are.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Balgaman, do you have a comment?
Madam Chair, if you would like for us to have a conversation regarding these two issues, it will be okay with us.
Okay. Any comments from the board? Mrs. Wright, do you have any suggestions or comments?
No, Ms. Cuthbert, I do not.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Mrs. Haynes, any comments? Mr. Persis, do you agree, disagree?
I agree.
You agree with which side? The union, to continue
in,
on.
To engage in the conversation.
Okay. Mrs. Haynes, is that your decision? Okay. Yes. And Mrs. Wright, you don't mind if we go along?
What's your question again, Ms. Cuthbert? I'm sorry.
Do you mind if we do have a conversation with these two issues, even though it is what Mr. Penley has stated?
I'm fine with whatever you recommend, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Thank you, Mrs. Wright. Mr. Colon.
Are the folks from ESC available?
I have the director is out today, but I do have the assistant director who's on the line.
Okay. I'm good. As long as there's somebody here who can speak to it.
This is a discussion, and it is open. We can bring up. We did go off topic just a wee bit earlier, talking about other issues. Mr. Penley, if you don't mind, do you mind if we proceed? It seems to be the decision of the board to continue.
I certainly understand, Madam Chair, and we do have staff available to answer and address any questions that you might have pertinent.
Okay. And thank you also for your legal advice. We do appreciate it very much. And you are duly noted. I'm sure it will be in the minutes. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right. So we will continue with the next one, the workload of ESE. Mrs. Albert, you can go ahead and get started. And then whoever wants to speak for our ESE department, Mr. Penley or Dr. Balgaman, you can call those individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert. So when we were thinking particularly about this item, we were referencing the additional paperwork that occurred for our ESE case managers and related service providers during the shutdown period that had occurred in March through the end of the previous school year. So thinking proactively and trying to put some safeguards in place for our ESE personnel, that is why we brought this issue forward. So at the time, during pre-planning and during the beginning of the school year, the first few days, you know, we convened for impasse. You know, this wasn't really a tangible situation, but we know that now that we've just moved through the interim reporting period, again, our ESE personnel are finding there are additional issues that are coming their way. I don't know if they're all specific to focus or not, but that seems to be the reoccurring theme. There is, and I, respectfully, Dr. Balgaman and I did speak about this on Friday. So, because the timeliness of a solution is the most important, right? So why would I wait to today if we could get it started? So knowing that there was some, the understanding previously was that the focus system, once your IEP was loaded, it would be drop-down boxes for reporting and things would be, and the paperwork that you needed to fill out would be contained within Focus. Life would be great, right? But what we found was that from the review date of entering the IEP into focus, that began the reporting periods. So they didn't align with the beginning of this academic school year. So if someone's IEP was loaded last academic school year, their reporting category 1 and 2 have already started, essentially. So fast forward to midterms for the 2020-21 school year, they're showing up as either 3 or maybe even 4, depending on. So what happened was, again, our ESE folks had to go back to a Word document and cut and paste and start from scratch, just an additional issue that we were hoping to find relief for. And so, again, I know there's been some change in the ESE department, and we want to give grace, but our practitioners, our case managers and service providers need that as well. So seeking solutions there, please.
Thank you, Mrs. Albert. Dr. Balgobin?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to call Aria here, who is our assistant director for ESE. Were you able to hear clearly what Ms. Albert was saying regarding some of the concerns in focus?
Thank you. I want to make sure I heard clearly. It was coming in and out of my volume. More so focus related, typing in a Word document and having to cut and paste it.
It was ongoing progress monitoring for the goals specific to reporting the midterms, for midterms.
The progress monitoring forms for the midterms.
Correct.
And I'm sorry, I was unable to hear the issue prior to that. I do apologize.
Well, so is
the alignment, I think.
Pardon me?
The alignment.
Right. And so it's just the, exactly, it's the misalignment of how what's occurring in focus for monitoring these IEP reporting periods and the alignment with I guess, our scheduling of when we're reporting out. There are 8 periods for reporting, so there are 4 midterms, 4 grade reporting periods. And then, so they're just not lining up. And I guess I don't know if Mr. Griffin perhaps would even be able to share. It's probably a push of one button, perhaps, but it will fix this issue probably across the board for these folks.
Okay. Dr. Balgobin, who's?
Yes, I think I would like is Mr. Griffin here? I know at one point in time.
He was.
Is Mr. Griffin here? So, Ms. Albert, can I ask a clarifying question? I know that Ms. Wright and I visited you a couple of months ago, when we talked a little bit about focus and where it stood last year with the integration from the old system to focus and some of the hiccups that we experienced. Is this something that's continuing after Ms. Wright? And I believe that Mr. Griffin was with us, too, in one meeting when we talked about ESE and focus at one point.
So those were two different meetings, yes, but there was one when Mr. Griffin was present, yes.
Yeah. So did this issue continue after that meeting that we had and the discussion of what was going to take place?
So it's related to
uh-huh.
what we spoke about the first time when we all met at the VUE office. It's related to it. It's a new issue, but they are connected, yes.
Okay.
So my question is this. Is there a possibility that maybe what's happened in focus with these 8 reporting times that our starting date was not adjusted? Like, so is it showing that the midterm was due 2 weeks ago or 2 weeks ahead of when, you know, we are now doing midterms? I mean, because simply what I'm just thinking, listening to you, because I know this was an issue last year and I spoke about it, and I spoke about how there was not a drop-down midterm, you know, and things mm-hmm. like that. But my thought now, listening to what's being said, is it a possibility that it's just, you know, our start date was not changed, so therefore midterms would have happened sooner than what they're happening when we push back to the August 31st date? And if that's the case, then I think you know, we need to actually bring Mr. Griffin and maybe Kamal to the table to say, you know, is that what the issue is? And if so, what's it take to fix that in focus?
So my understanding from listening to teachers is that I think it's more of the reporting period for the annual review, because the annual review is yearly. So if I enter my IEP today, 1013, so that's the frame I think that it's working from. So the next time I go to report progress monitoring, that's going to be reporting period one, based on when I entered the IEP information. That's how I interpret it from a teacher, but let's talk to a couple teachers and find out directly what they've experienced, as you know, because they're doing it.
Well, and hearing what you're saying now, so because we're moving into this system and all those had to be entered, typically in the past what happened is if a student already had an IEP in there, then, you know, it was just, it continued. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you went in and adjusted the goals and all. But anytime a student has newly been classified to receive services, then that is the start date, you know, and we do have to review within a year. So I think, I don't know that we can, you know, come up with a solution here today, because I really think we need to talk to the people that are managing the system. Mm-hmm. And they just need to look, because it sounds to me as if, you know, and granted, I don't know that checking or unchecking the box, it's that easy, but I think it all comes down to the fact that we have now uploaded all of these IEPs, like ones that may already have been ongoing for 6 years, and new ones at the same time, and it's just, you know, getting the system to read what's happening. And I appreciate you bringing it back up, because, you know, it was an issue I felt last year when we didn't even have a midterm report in there and they were doing this by hand.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, any other board member like to make a comment? Mr. Persis.
Madam Chair, are we going to hear from the ESC?
Yes, they're on their way over. So I thought,
yes, they are on their way.
Yes, they're coming over from Brewster Center Cross. So do you want to reserve your time for that?
Well, no, I just want to, exactly what Ms. Haynes said. This is such a pain, you know where, because it just adds so much grief to what the teacher's got to do when you got to do extra work when it's supposed to be drop down, drop down, drop down. This is tedious work, and it's date, you know, generated, and you got to do it, and there's guidelines, and there's federal law and rules, and a lot of stress, and then when you got to create extra work, it's just, you know, you just want to choke somebody. So, I mean, we don't want them to do that. So, I'm hoping that we can get it resolved.
We don't want that either.
We don't want anybody to get in trouble.
Thank God for the plexiglass. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all. I'm sure it's a techie thing we got to fix.
Thank you. Mrs. Wright, any more comments from you before we have Mr. Griffin come to the hot seat?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mrs. Wright. Mr. Cologne, anything to add?
No, I'll just say that it's probably premature, but I think this is something that the district and the teachers, I don't know if the superintendent comes up with a committee of teachers, and all, but it sounds so operational that I think despite our best efforts here today, we would never be able to describe exactly what our teachers are going through. So I'm thankful that you brought it up. I do have other concerns, which I'll speak to you about later on. But I just feel that this is something that just needs to be worked through.
Yes, Mrs. Haynes.
If this is happening with the IEPs, my question would also be, is it happening with the LEPs by any chance? Like, because... is the ESOL, are ESOL teachers facing the same thing if their LEPs are also going into focus? I mean, so if we're going to look at it, I don't want to look at just one thing in isolation. I would say we need to look at both parts, because if one part's not working, probably the other part's not working.
And EPs for gifted?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Haynes. Dr. Balgobin?
Yes, ma'am. I do have three very important individuals here on the techie side of the house and content as well. So Mr. Griffin is our chief information officer. Please join us. I have Tina Skipper and Stephanie Workman. Can you please join us?
Good afternoon, our beloved experts.
Good afternoon. So we're kind of playing catch-up in our office. We're in the middle of state reporting. So the issue, as I've understood it, is that midterm progress reports and grade reporting is not necessarily aligning to what's being also required of our ESC teachers. And I can tell you that inside of the system, the ESC part of it is not necessarily triggered by a calendar, so it's not at all associated to the calendar inside the system. It is just understood that in addition to those midterm and report card timeframes, that they also need to do their progress monitoring, which is also similar to our ELL population. There are certain things that they have to review for ELLs that have already exited, and they also review those at the same time as report cards. So the concern I think that we first heard was about drop-downs as well. As I understand that those midterm progress reports for ESC students, it was intentional to not use drop-downs when they were set up because it detracts from the individualization of the progress report. So if that's something that we would like to, as a district, go back and revisit, certainly welcome to go back and look at those individual midterm reports, but that was intentional when it was first set up by the previous ESC director. Does that clarify? Because I've popped in and out of this conversation and I've been delayed and had to catch up. So, okay.
Ms. Albert, would you come up to the microphone?
Sorry. Just to clarify, we're talking about something different. I know that the desire was that the goal be individually written, the goal and the objectives be individually written, and that's why the goal bank was removed. This is something different. This is once the goals are in there, the progress monitoring specific to what's already been input into the system. So it's not the coming up with the goal itself. It's the ability to correctly articulate the progress in the right reporting period.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
To an extent, but I'm still not clear what the issue is. Is the issue
that
the time in which it's available and that they're notified to do so, or?
The reporting periods are off. So some teachers were saying they went in to do what would be reporting period one.
Mm-hmm.
For midterms in the first quarter, and it was showing three or four. And so what they had to do was go back in and delete, and then at some point they defaulted to a Word document like we were using last year prior to putting these IEPs into the Focus system.
Okay. And I'd have to go back and have a conversation with Sarah Kinney. Sarah Kinney has been the direct, I can't say direct contact, but she's been the one with the most history in terms of the development of the documents themselves. I think what is being brought up and referenced right at the moment is that the period of time in which progress reporting period it is established by the system in a sense that if the student came to us at mid-year, it's defaulting to a specific time that's not in alignment with where we are in the year. And so it's causing confusion. I believe that's the issue that she's bringing up. I know that there's been a lot of communication back and forth in terms of which way that it should be and which way they want it to be. And that's gone back and forth with the vendor themselves focus in terms of how to correct that. But until I think Volusia County Schools gives them a clear indicator of how we would like it to be, we can't address how to change it. Do you have anything that's popping in mind?
No. What I was just going to add is that it looks like, I just pulled one up, that it is set up based on the one-year duration of the IEP. So if their IEP was done October of this year, then it would be the next marking period would be 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. It doesn't follow the calendar year. It is set up to follow the IEP itself.
Okay.
So I think that's where the confusion is, Elizabeth. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
In which case, you could have a student that enters at October is starting with one, but a student who entered earlier is in three, and so on and so forth.
Correct. Correct. And that was something in one of our ESE meetings that we have with Focus twice a month that we talked about, is trying to make it align with the calendar and the marking periods, because we had even talked about having it open and close on that same marking period window that we give when the teachers post their grades. So that's a discussion that has been happened, but a decision has not been made.
Okay. So I think from what we're hearing is that Dr. Balgobin needs to get together with the people necessary to make that decision to see what the district prefers. So Dr. Balgobin, I'm sure you will get together and have a meeting with all those who are pertinent to this information, and also to have some teachers in there who actually have to use the system and are dear blessed treasured experts in on there as well. So, and of course, Mr. Griffin.
I will, ma'am.
So what would we do without that? So is that okay with
yes,
you?
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Albert, is that all right with you? Okay. Thank
we will
you,
put
Mr.
a
Penley.
Committee together.
Okay. All right. Thank you, ladies, for coming over to help clarify all this for us. We're truly grateful. Okay. We are on excellent time. So we have a good 30 minutes, even with a 10-minute transition time, to make sure we social distance to our next meetings. We will now discuss the Volusia online class size caps, which is the last item that that we have before us today. Okay. Mrs. Albert, your
yes,
statement.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. So I will say to you that subsequent the impasse hearing, we have engaged in conversation with Ms. Hazel for the purpose of providing clarity and consistency and expectations for our Volusia Online teachers. We know there has been a significant increase in teachers working for VOL. They previously had 24 full-time teachers, and now they're like 300-something. So there's been a lot of transition there. And so what we know is the student enrollment has also astronomically increased. And as we continue to move through the process of hiring instructional staff, not only classroom instructors, but guidance counselors as well, we know that the class sizes are very large. And we've had some conversation about what we can do. But we're hoping to establish some caps. We've spoken with Dr. Peterson. 180 was the target that we were looking for at secondary. And the intermediate elementary, I believe, was 45. Primary elementary was 35, trying to recall that. But what we know is some of the teachers currently have 400 students on their rosters. And that, absolutely, 400 full-time students. And what we also know is as instructional staff are added to VOL and the full-time students are divided out, part-time students then roll on. So it's like we pour a little bit out of the bucket, but then the bucket gets filled again. So wanting to try to establish some hard caps so that we can not only provide relief to the instructional personnel, but so we can adequately support the needs of the students. I don't know how we manage 300-400 students, particularly if you're teaching writing. How would you even grade that many essays? We know that there are, I believe, 6 guidance counselors who are currently working for Volusia Online Learning. The high school guidance counselors, I think each one of them has 800 seniors, and then they have 9 and 10th graders as well. And the other guidance counselors have thousands of students. So we're asking for relief for VOL. We're asking to establish hard caps so that we can do this job well.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Penley? Or Dr. Balgobin?
Yes, ma'am. Just want to share 2 things quickly in terms of a process that we have in place regarding Volusia Online. The same way we're monitoring our brick-and-mortar settings, every Wednesday. On Fridays, we're monitoring the numbers for Volusia Online. And just to keep you updated in terms of a trend that we have been seeing for the past couple of weeks, is that we're averaging approximately between 120 and 135 students per week for the past 4 weeks, I would say, that has been returning to their traditional setting. So it was very important for us to have a system in place to kind of determine what students are leaving VOL, where they're going, what grade level, so we can leverage the staffing needs. In addition to that, Ms. Kaur has worked extensively with VOL, and she's still currently monitoring and kind of being a direct support. And I would ask Ms. Kaur to please come on up, because I think she has some more specific numbers for us, and we'll be able to elaborate further in where we are and what we will be doing.
Dr. Baugman, if I may, just before Ms. Kaur speaks on that, I just wanted to remind the board that there is no constitutional or statutory requirement for class size caps on remote learning. So keep in mind, this is an asynchronous model, not physically present, where students are not in a classroom like we have for the constitutional class size cap for brick and mortar. So that is why, even though there is not a constitutional or statutory requirement, your district still maintains and has made efforts, as Dr. Balgobin mentioned, to address the influx of students. It's a good problem to have. You have students who have moved from brick and mortar into the Volusia online learning model, but through that, Ms. Kaur can address how those efforts and the extensive efforts, as Dr. Balgobin mentioned, to address that asynchronous model.
Thank you, Mr. Penley. I didn't realize that.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Mrs. Kaur.
I have good news for Ms. Albert and for the board. We currently have 10 school counselors at Volusia Online Learning, not 6. Yeah. So we have 10. We were able to absorb some through the unit allocation process, and we're excited about that. The ones that were added were teachers who listed as their first choice Volusia Online Learning, so that was great. And we're concentrating 5 of them in the high school division alone. Our current numbers for Volusia Online Learning as of today, full-time, we have 7,345 students. Part-time, we have 2,547 students. Part-time enrollment, just for everyone's information, with VOL, is a rolling enrollment, meaning it doesn't end. We house our OCI students, off-campus instruction students, through our part-time VOL. We also house our hospital homebound and homeschool, so those part-time enrollments there is no cutoff for that. So yes, they are continuing to enroll, as well as any student who decides that maybe they don't want to do PE in school and they want to do it online and they decide in October they want to do so, they can do so. Full-time enrollment has closed and has been closed since school started. So we did begin the year, and you are correct, Ms. Albert, 35 was the cap for primary, 45 for intermediate in the elementary classes, and we began at 180, and we did have to go up to 210 was our cap in secondary. And as students continue to enroll before the cutoff occurred, we do know that in some of our higher need areas like reading, which are teachers that are harder to find, that those enrollments are larger in some cases. And I know that you've been working with Susie and Ms. Hazel on talking about those. What we did do for those teachers, what we tried to do wherever possible, we do offer Florida Virtual as one of our platforms. And interestingly enough, the enrollment in Florida Virtual is a lot, there are a lot fewer students that enrolled in full-time Florida Virtual. The majority of our students enrolled with us in our Edgenuity program. So what we saw when we were looking at, say, for middle school, if we had 4 teachers in world history, we had 3 teachers teaching just the Edgenuity and 1 teacher teaching the Florida Virtual section, because it's a different platform, and we didn't want to ask teachers necessarily to go back and forth between platforms. So the teachers who had Florida Virtual and had fewer students, they would pick up an elective, mm-hmm. or they might pick up those part-time students. So that's how we've been managing that part of it.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Mrs. Wright, if you don't mind. Mrs. Wright, how about you go first this time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm up to yield on this one. I may have one in a few minutes, but go ahead.
I can't hear her.
She's good.
I didn't hear what you said at the very end. You might have one later?
Yes, that's what she said. She was going to yield, but she might have one at the end.
Oh, at the end. Okay. Thank you. So, Mr. Colon, you said you would like to go next.
So I guess my question is, what class are we saying has 400 students, that a teacher may have 400 students? Is that accurate?
May I get my computer?
I'm going to check my Facebook Messenger because that's where I got that information, interestingly enough.
I can tell you that originally there were, and that we've been continuing to level, and as we've been hiring, and we are still hiring, we were able to get quite a few teachers during the unit allocation process from our brick-and-mortar schools where there may have been a cut. So that takes time as they add those teachers on. There is a training that the teachers have to go through. Also, the teachers have the full 10 days if they choose to utilize it before they move to VOL from their base school. And then they would come in for their training, and then the ladies at VOL then had to, just like we would in the school, level out those classes. So take some from UUU and make a new section. And they're still doing that. And I know they had new teachers at, even as late as Friday, getting trained. So the list I have is probably over a week old.
So while you're checking, yeah. This was an English teacher that reached out to me, and she had 382 students in an English class one day. The next morning, she woke up to find that she had 400. Then she had also picked up a second class, a speech class, because there was, I guess originally journalism was going to be offered, but then there was no journalism teacher, so they converted those kids into speech, and she picked it up. So our folks are wanting to help out.
Right.
They just need manageable numbers. That's all.
Right. And so I am supportive of the idea of finding I won't say a cap, because obviously a cap is not it, but this year is unlike any other year. And so we have, you know, having kids who do for or Volusia Online on both platforms they've done, this year is different because these kids may not be kids that are at grade level. And so where that teacher typically was sort of proctoring a class, if I could use that verbiage, because the content already existed, mm-hmm. here she's having to help remediate with some of the kids who need the assistance. And so I don't know that the Volusia Online of last year compared to the Volusia Online of this year is exactly the same, because, you know, we really didn't put criteria around the family's choice to choose Volusia Online. So I guess I don't understand how we could have a teacher with, you know, I'll just say 300 kids. I mean, I don't. That just doesn't calculate to me, especially in English class. I was thinking it may be an art class that, you know, like a digital art class, and it didn't really require, but an English class, I don't know how you, am I missing something?
No, other than high school English is the course that we've had the hardest time finding teachers to fill the position.
But I can tell you some of your foreign language classes are over 300,
mm-hmm.
PE upwards of 300. So I think it's an across-the-board thing.
Yeah.
And there were some, when we first started having the conversations with Dr. Peterson, there were some close to 500, maybe two. But I don't know how one mm-hmm. manages that.
So I'll
I will say that we did leverage the LOA list that Ms. Albert spoke about earlier, and I even personally called some of those teachers, and we did get some of the teachers that were just not comfortable teaching in brick and mortar that came, but I had some that just said no, they were just taking the LOA as well. So, but we were able to hire some for VOL from there, so we've exhausted, and we've continued to post our openings even after the unit allocation and people were placed. Because we know that we couldn't, Mark will laugh, because every time we were at the table talking about unit allocations, I'm like, we need it at VOL, because I was really trying to get teachers. But we also had openings at schools, and we couldn't ignore them, you know, as well. So we did have some teachers through unit allocation that went from one school to another school because there were vacancies. But you'll see it in our areas where we're, when you say foreign language, Grace Kellemeyer told me yesterday, we have five foreign language vacancies at brick and mortar right now as well. So in some cases, there are positions that are hard to fill.
You know, okay.
Yeah.
Very good. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cologne. Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you both for keeping track of all this. It definitely changes a lot. I guess my concern right now is moving forward as we, before we know it, it's going to be the second semester. And I just wanted to know, do we have a plan to, you know, we're going to be asking parents, are you planning to continue with your child in VOL, and asking teachers, those of you who have been involved in VOL, if there are vacancies, would you want to come back? And then those that want to come back to brick and mortar, will they be given the opportunity to maybe go back to their school from where they used to work? Or, and I know that depends on so many other issues, but I would like to at least ask the teachers so that we know what they want, and as much as possible try to help them get to where they want to be.
Sure, and that's fair. And I know Mark West and Rachel did that on the reverse, you know, when we knew we were doing these displacements and they had a survey and they were able to pick their top three choices. I know that's a question that's come to me from some of my principals. Like, we lost some really good people to VOL. Can we have them back when it's time to get them back? So I'm sure that HR would be willing to do that again and make sure that we meet the teachers' needs wherever we possibly can.
Great. Thank you.
And that would be part of that weekly Friday meeting that they're starting. And it was supposed to have started last Friday, but I believe it did not take place. And Patty, you said this Friday it's set up for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Persis. Mrs. Haynes.
So a question I had early on, and I don't think I ever got a clear answer for it. I know what we decided to kind of set as appropriate class sizes, but in reading up on this, it's my understanding that FLVS has different numbers for their class sizes, and that our numbers are actually lower than what their standard class sizes are. Is that accurate?
In some cases, I know that Susie did a analysis, and she also we asked her to get with her surrounding districts. And so Florida Virtual wants a 1-to-180 ratio. That's their hope, but they're well over that as well. And everybody is seeing that because of COVID across the districts. When we did survey about 10 districts, we have the most full-time students. We have more full-time students in our VOL than Orange County, which is substantially bigger than us. We have more than Hillsborough, which is substantially bigger than us, because we really marketed it and we wanted it to be an option for our families. So right now we're seeing that when she surveys her partners, the other principals of the virtual schools, they're all saying they're over their caps of what they would prefer to be.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Mrs. Wright, would you like to add anything now?
No, Madam Chair, actually, my question was answered. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I just have one. As we do move forward, as Mr. Persis, and I think that's what we're all looking for, is to help resolve this in the near future. And I know that our foreign language, our world language, has been an issue for quite a while. And I just have to say this, that as an English teacher, we have been telling everybody that one day English teachers are going to be far and few between, mm-hmm. because not too long ago we were the ones that were all out there. So have we contacted like UCF or Daytona State to help stir the pot to get these particular people to join our ranks, not just in teaching, but to be world language or just language teachers, because I always considered myself a language teacher, mm-hmm. even reading teachers. What can we do as a district or as an educational group to help increase people to be interested to go into these particular subjects? And do we have is there any bright light at the end of this dark tunnel that we have right now?
Well, you know, I know Christy Bahaney, that's her primary responsibility as our coordinator for recruitment and retention, and I know she's in constant communication with the surrounding colleges. I can tell you that one of our personnel in teaching and learning went to Florida State for the orientation for her own daughter, and when they had to stand up based on their who's going into this, you know, who wants to be a teacher, when they said who wants to be a teacher and it was an auditorium filled, there were fewer than 10 students that stood up. So I hear you. I hear exactly what you're saying. They're not going into education like in the past, and a lot of the teachers that we do hire are teachers like myself. I was a banker before I became a teacher, so I didn't necessarily go to school to be a teacher, and I had to learn that. So we are seeing a lot more of our teachers coming as a second career. They have the content knowledge or the content degree, but not necessarily the educational background. So I know Christy's working on that, and Dr. Balgobin may add.
So that is a very good point that you've made, Ms. Cuthbert. We do have to continue to strengthen our relationship with these. We have several colleges. As a matter of fact, we were having this conversation just yesterday. We have so many universities and colleges right here in Volusia County. So we need to continue to strengthen our partnership for sure. But I do want to share with you that I worked recently with Stetson University because, as you know, one of the areas that has been a depleted subject area for us for hiring has been ESC.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a plan. We've discussed a plan for, we have about 160 of our teachers that through a survey that was done indicated that they have an interest in obtaining a master's degree in ESC. And so Stetson University has shared with me that they would be willing for it's a one-year program. They would be willing to fund or to pay for 40% of the degree, you know, that master's degree, which was communicated to these teachers. And we're also looking for a partnership for the other 10%. But we should have something for the board and for our general public to announce in terms of the ESC area. And we're looking to possibly start this next year, early next year, with a cadre of 20 participants. So it'll be 20, 20, 20. And those individuals are willing to sign an agreement with us to work with us for 3 years. So I know I can share with you that's in regard to ESC. But Christy Mahaney and the HR team have been giving guidance in terms of let's now look at our incoming colleges and universities and really have a really proactive approach and strengthen our current partnership that we have and continue to build some that may not currently exist. So we'll be putting a plan together.
And we do have a virtual job hiring fair we're participating in, and Volusia Online, Susie and I think also Ms. Leffler are going to attend to try to hire, and it is virtual. It's through EdWeek, and we've signed up for that as a district. So we know we still have vacancies in our schools and at VOL, so they're going to be participating in that.
Okay, thank you. And I know you're working on those numbers to reduce them as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Thank you. As we conclude our work session this afternoon, are there any last comments, maybe for Mr. Griffin or Mr. Penley, any of the assistant deputy superintendents? Ms. Albert, we'll save you for right before the board. Ms. Kaur, any last comments? Anyone like to?
Just thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then go ahead, Mrs. Albert, any last comments? And then we'll have last comments from Mr. Penley.
Thank you again, Mrs. Cuthbert, and members of the board, Dr. Balgobin, Mrs. Wright, and everyone in the audience today and those listening. I do want to say thank you to all of you for this unprecedented opportunity during this very unprecedented time to have this conversation after the impasse hearing. I think that in this moment, and I want everyone to take this with the kindness and love that it's intended to be given with, cooler heads have better conversations. And so I'm glad that we were able to come together today on the 13th to talk about these items that were still lingering, that needed, quite frankly, to be discussed. I think solutions are in the pipeline. I'm hoping that relief is coming. And it's just nice to be able to have a free-flowing, longer than three-minute discussion about the very relevant issues that are in our schools today. So, again, thank you. And I'm always available for comment afterwards.
Thank you, Mrs. Albert. Mr. Pendley, any last comments?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the board. On behalf of the superintendent, I think it's been a productive conversation, and we look forward to making improvements and addressing some of the concerns that have been brought before us.
Okay. Thank you very much. Board members, would you like to have a last comment? Okay. Mrs. Wright?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you for doing a wonderful job and great conference.
Thank you. Thank you. It's just knocking off your shoulder. So thank you so much. Dr. Balkovin, any last comments for you? And then I'll have Mr. Doran, and then we will conclude.
I would just like to thank again, once again, this great board that we have, Mr. Doran, for assisting us today. Mr. Pendley, for a great job that you've done. Everyone here that's part of Cabinet. Ms. Albert, I believe that in the spirit of collaboration, we can accomplish great things together, and there's no wonder that this year we have chosen as a team, all of us, that together, working together makes us stronger. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Doran.
Nothing further.
Okay, I too want to thank everyone for coming, and I did forget to even mention Mr. Aiken back there, who does has huge shoulders in which we rely on all the time. I just want to say thank you for, you know, our staff, our teachers. I mean, where would we be without our staff? And we are here to serve our students and their families, to make sure that their lives are somewhat normal when they come into our classrooms, whether it be virtual classrooms, whether it be brick and mortar, whether it's on the playground or in the four walls of a classroom, wherever that classroom is deemed to be. And that's why we come to work every day. And I must admire those who are in the cabinet positions, the number of solutions that you have to come up with. And you're coming up with so many solutions. And that, as you said, Mrs. Albert, so many of them are in the pipeline that we as a board, I think I can speak for my colleagues, we're very grateful for the time that you spend, because we're the ones that always email you and say, excuse me, this needs to be solved. And you have. So I want to be able to recognize all of you publicly for all the hard work you do in the early mornings and the late evenings that all of you put in. So thank you very much for all of you, and we'll see you again at 3:30. Our work session is now 11 minutes before the time that we designated that we can stop. So thank you so much for everyone. Have a good afternoon.